talks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal, come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. Before we get any further, a huge thank you to the fabulous Flea for guest hosting last week's show while I was enjoying a wonderful vacation with my family. In addition to presenting nifty animal songs and comedy, Flea had a fascinating conversation with Jan Williams of Southeastern Guide Dogs about what's involved in raising a puppy that will eventually become a guide dog for someone visually impaired. So if you missed that show, the audio archive is now posted on talkinganimals.net. Today on Talking Animals, my guest is Michelle Schilling of the Bay Area Disaster Animal Response Team, or DART, which provides an array of services and resources in the event of a hurricane or other disaster that places animals in peril. So, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing DJ at WMNF.org. Let's welcome Michelle Schilling to Talking Animals. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning. Thank you for having us in here today.
Oh, thanks so much for coming. And again, it's always like to note, it's just so wonderful to have someone in person and, you know, on the phone's fine when we need to do it, but in person where there's actual eye contact, like a normal conversation, is great, great, great. So thanks for coming in today. So and I touched very, very briefly, glibly, really, on Bay Area DART in the introduction, sort of in the most fleeting fashion. So you're the expert here. Maybe we could just start by asking you to explain more specifically what DART is and what it does.
Our team is a volunteer team. We have a little over 80 active and trained volunteers. And our mission is to educate the community about disaster preparedness for their families and their pets. We do that by attending special events in the area. You might see us set up at a table at a festival locally, or sometimes companies will ask us to come out and speak to their employees. We also have a speakers bureau where we can go out to different associations. If you have a community association and you'd like us to come out and talk to the members of what we can do and how they can best prepare for a disaster.
Great, great, great. Now, I gathered that it's largely, if not even exclusively, sort of volunteer-driven.
It's 100% volunteer-driven. We are not a 501(c). It is just truly a group of educated, trained animal people that want to protect the animals and educate the community on how they can best prepare themselves. We do deploy, for example, if there is a disaster locally, and we are talking the Bay Area, we do deploy under Pinellas County Animal Services or Hillsborough County Animal Services. We assist them with the temporary sheltering and care for the animals housed in the shelters.
So is that sort of partly by way of saying that because Bay Area DART is not a 501(c)(3) itself, that it operates kind of under the umbrella of those organizations that are 501(c)(3)s.
Exactly. Well, we actually deploy. We would never go to, if there was something that were happening in the Bay Area, we would never just show up and help out. We wait for the call from Pinellas County Animal Services or Hillsborough County Animal Services.
Asking your help, asking for your services. So how many volunteers are we really talking about here?
We have a little bit over 80 that are active and trained. We have different types of volunteers. And we're definitely looking for volunteers if someone has an interest in that. We have auxiliary members, and our auxiliary members will help locally. What they will do, they will help with setting up the shelters, cleaning, feeding. Sometimes it's just a matter of if we're bringing in animals from a hoarding case or something like that, just giving them a little bit of TLC. And then we actually have team members that go through specific training. There's specific FEMA classes, incident command system classes we need to take, and there's also some specific animal sheltering classes that we take, and that allows you to actually deploy into the field when there's a disaster.
Great. Well, some of that I'm sure we'll want to delve into a bit further, but what sort of draws the volunteers? I mean, a love of animals, surely, but are there other traits that seem to be uniform across those 80 folks?
Actually, we're from all different industries. I work across the bay for the Convention and Visitors Bureau. I market the destination. We have some people that are by living professional veterinarians, animal technicians, vet techs, things like that. So it's a diverse group. It's really the love of the animals and really wanting to help out.
So in the interest of making this sort of a bit more specific, I think it might be instructive to hear more specifically how you got involved, Michelle. So what were the circumstances under which you wandered into the world of Bay Area DART?
Well, over the years, we've always had multiple pets in our family and really great relationships with our veterinarians. I always was the person who would take the animal that the veterinarian had that he wanted to maybe foster and get it adopted out. Then when I moved to Florida, I became involved at Clearwater Marine Aquarium on their marine mammal stranding team. So I worked with several of the different dolphins and whales that they've had over the years, including Nicholas and Winter when she first came in. And when Katrina hit, it was kind of disheartening for me because there was a couple dolphins that were actually out into the Gulf and from the aquariums, they were trying to get them back. And I had seen a dog that looked just like mine standing up on the roof of a house, and I wasn't able to do anything. You know what? I mean, when there's a disaster, everyone has a good intention of running to the disaster site to help out. But really, you need to have specific skill sets, specific training, because sometimes you can actually be more of a burden on the structure.
Counterproductive. Sure,
yes,
yeah, people
exactly.
are running around. Yeah.
So I felt really helpless. And I thought, you know, what am I going to do? And I researched and found Bay Area DART, and I went through the training in that because I thought if it happens here in our community, I want to be able to do something and I want to be able to help.
Sure. So what animals currently live with you?
We have a beagle.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
She's a very active little girl, and she's got the life.
All right. Well, great. I'm sure she cheers on your efforts in this way. So did you have any sort of, other than what you said about seeing those images like from Katrina, and again, we'll get into Katrina, I'm sure, in a moment too, but did you have any personal experience with animals in a disaster, you know, situation before becoming a volunteer with Bay Area DART?
I didn't deploy to anything, but just personally, I grew up in the Midwest, so I've been through a lot of tornadoes. So we've had a lot of loss of structure. We've had displaced family members that have stayed with us. We've had fire situations. And even at that time, my parents had some livestock that we actually had to take care of during the disaster. So that's where I kind of started seeing the need. I mean, as a child, I've seen my aunt's house just totally leveled by that and the whole community.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's plenty of firsthand experience then. So, all right. So it sounds like from what you said, kind of in the little overview that some of the Bay Area DART volunteers do different things and undergo different training, but what's sort of the, I imagine there's probably a core training that someone that heard this today and said, you know what, I'd like to get involved, and certainly God forbid that a hurricane or disaster hits, I'd like to help out. What would be sort of their training path, or what is the key training that the at least a basic Bay Area DART volunteer would undergo?
Well, if you go to our website, bayareadart.org, there is a list of classes that you need to take. Several of the classes are the FEMA ICS Incident Command System classes, the basics 100, 200, 700. You can take those online. They're very easy to do. And then you must attend a sheltering class. And there is a state organization for disaster response, the Florida SARC, which is State Animal Rescue Coalition. They offer a class that is a one day on a Saturday. We actually have a new class coming up August 3rd in Naples. So if you're available, if someone would be interested in attending that, they can also email to bayareadart.org. Go on our website, bayareadart.org, or volunteerdart@gmail.com to find out more about that class.
So, certainly kind of like what you were saying before about just not someone running into a disaster situation with no plan or no guidance in the same way that people that are involved with Bay Area DART or have to undergo.
Exactly.
A number of
never self-deploy. And even organizations in the community, we all know in the animal rescue world that we don't go until we're invited in. I mean, even if there is a disaster and Bay Area DART wants to go, we do not go until we're invited into the disaster.
Sure. Well, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Michelle Schilling of the Bay Area Disaster Animal Response Team, or DART. If you'd like to ask Michelle a question about planning or responding to a disaster in terms of animals or anything else sort of relevant to that, or offer a comment on that, you can please call us at 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So let's look at sort of a hypothetical that may quickly become less hypothetical. So Chantal, of course, is out there looming, and at least last I knew before we came on the air here, sort of poised to become a hurricane, but it's unclear what will happen and what its path is. But let's just say, for the purpose of a conversation, it makes landfall this week, later this week. Sort of fashion, if you would, like, you know, a couple of scenarios of how DART volunteers might be deployed and what they would do if Chantal did make landfall, and it was significant that then placed animals, household animals, other animals in peril.
If we know that, for example, if Pinellas County goes under a hurricane watch or a hurricane warning and then they open the shelters, we will go, our volunteers will go to the pet-friendly shelters, or three pet-friendly shelters in Pinellas County. We will help the animal services get the shelters set up, get them staffed. We will be there when people check into the shelters. We'll help with the intake. We'll help with their registration. We'll help take care of the animals. We also have volunteers who will stay there during the storm. They will help up with the feeding and the daily care of the animals, because when you go to a shelter, your animals are not right with you. You're going to be in one area. The animals are going to be in another area, and you're going to go back at different times of the day to feed or to take care of your animal. But we will have staff back in there with the animals throughout the event. Once the event is over, we will help them break down and release the animals to their owners.
And so along those lines, let's say, because one of the things that you hear so often in the midst of disasters of this kind is that, you know, you described that you would go back periodically to feed and care for your animals at a different shelter. But what if I'm just sort of too panicky or hysterical or just worried about what might become of my animals, and either I refuse to go anywhere or I refuse to part with them just because I'm worried what might happen. Will I see them again? Some of the, you know, related to some of the horror stories we all have heard and read over the years. What happens then?
Well, and there are a lot of horror stories. I mean, there was a survey after Katrina that they said that approximately 44% of the people that didn't evacuate chose not to do so because they didn't want to leave their animals
behind. Absolutely, yeah.
So it's not what we want to do then, it's what we want to do now. And now is when we want to be taking a look. Are we in an evacuation zone? If you live in an evacuation zone, you need to really make sure that you have a plan. If you don't live in an evacuation zone, you still might want to think about, if something does come through here, you might be 5 days where you can't get to public. So make sure that you have extra food and supplies and medicines for your pets on hand to hold yourself over for anywhere from 7 to 14 days. If you are in an evacuation zone today, you can start thinking about that today. Where are you going to go? Do you have a friend or family member that you can go and stay with? If you don't have that, a lot of things, and Pinellas County has a toolkit for this on their emergency management website, is that if you want to start host homes, companies can do that with their employees, and they can work out host homes for people that are not in evacuation zones, can take in the other employees. Another one is faith-based organizations. A lot of churches are starting to do that to create the host homes. The last place you really want to go is the shelters. They're limited numbers, so you want to try to find other options for that. There's also the option of pet-friendly hotels, but again, you know, again, limited availability. Mm-hmm. So you really want to start thinking now where you're going to go.
And let me ask you a question that, you know, some people may know and some people may not, but how do you determine if you don't automatically know whether or not you are in an evacuation zone?
You can go to your county website, the emergency management office, whether you're in Manatee or Hillsborough or Pinellas, wherever you're at in the Bay Area. It's also another thing, a lot of people travel with their pets. So if you're traveling and something is impending, you can go to their emergency management website and they will have the different evacuation zones there for you listed. You can also pick up at local, like for example, Publix will have the storm guides available for them. Mm-hmm. Or you can go to any of the, usually the county offices will have information for you as well. The other easy thing to do is to go to our BayAreaDART.org website, and on the left-hand side, you will see a list of about 20 different organizations, and you can connect right through to Pinellas County, to Hillsborough County, to Manatee County.
Right, so they can kind of guide you if you're
correct,
not sure what zone you're in or how you would proceed. But again, one of the things that you said that I think is really important already, Michelle, is that there are a number of steps or places you could go with your animal. And that might actually be advantageous to go with your animal before the shelter option.
Exactly. And the shelter option is really, you know, we want to push that the shelter option is your last option.
Right.
You know, if you have friends, ask them if you can come and stay with them. You know, if you play bingo, I mean, whatever it is you do in your social life, if you're a scuba diver, shuffleboard, whatever it is, you know, that may be the places you may want to look for resources of places that you can go without going to a hotel or shelter first.
And does anyone, because I know there's part of why a conversation like this, I think, is just so important and so valuable, I mean, any time of year, but especially this time of year, because I just think there's so many kind of misconceptions that kind of swirl around this world. So let's go back to our hypothetical, or at least trumped up hypothetical about Chantal making landfall being kind of more serious than obviously it's likely to be from what we know. Are there circumstances in which someone would, county person or some other authority, would require you to do something specific with your animal or only just recommend that you do something with your animal?
Well, you cannot, if it's not a pet-friendly shelter, you cannot take your animal in there. In Katrina, going back to that again, there were over 600,000 pets estimated that were left abandoned, just wandering the streets.
Right.
A lot of people left and left their pets tied up in their yards or just locked up in their homes.
Right.
And what happened with that was that either they became peril victims of the floodwaters or starvation or of other predators in the area. A lot of people, even though their pet may have been in their home, it was weeks before they could get back, and they had starved to death. So that's why we recommend you need to take your pet with you. If it's not safe for you, it's not going to be safe for them.
Right. But there's sort of two sides to that. One is what you've described, where people refuse to leave and unfortunately met some, in many cases, some dark fates. But on the other hand, some of the other unfortunate things that people heard and read coming out of Katrina and other things is where they were sort of forced to leave or thought they were being forced to leave. Now, if I'm holed up in my home and I'm in an evacuation zone, but I'm just nervous about what's going to happen to my animals, or maybe have a special needs animal, or whatever.
Right.
I just don't want to go. Can anyone come along and say, "Hey, you've got to," or "All right, you're staying on your own risk"? How does that really play out? Versus, I think a lot of people are concerned about what they can be required to do.
Well, if your evacuation, there's mandatory and voluntary evacuations. If you are going to go against law enforcement rules, that's your decision. I would never suggest something like
right.
that. I mean, they're doing that for your well-being.
Right.
I think you're maybe talking about people like getting onto buses and not being able to take their pets with them.
Right.
A lot of that is why we're asking people to have your plan ahead of time, pre-register for shelters. There has been some new regulations and things that have come into place that in order for areas to get some funding money that they have to provide for transportation for people with pets. For example, special needs. There's a lot of people in our area that are special needs that they may need to be in a facility that can provide oxygen or a limited amount of medical care. A lot of times they don't want to leave because they have a pet and they don't know what's going to happen to their pet because they're not going into a pet-friendly shelter either. One of the services that they can contact through Pinellas County Animal Services or Bay Area DART is that we will go and pick up their pets and take them to a host home so that they can go ahead and evacuate.
Oh, great.
So, and if anyone has a concern about evacuating and their pets,
right.
really reach out to us now.
I mean,
it's better to be proactive and do it now before
sure.
the storms actually come.
Right.
If it's transportation that's an issue, touch base with your animal services or emergency management and say, I'm here, I don't drive, what are going to be my options? Most of the bus routes will run continuously during a disaster, so there will be public transportation, but they can find the specifics of their community by reaching out to either emergency management or their animal services.
Sure. You mentioned at one point in that something about pre-registering for shelters. Now, is that something where you kind of establish a relationship with a shelter in anticipation of evacuating or some sort of disaster?
Absolutely. You should be pre-registering now.
Yeah. And what does that mean exactly? What does that do? And how does that play out should something, a disaster hit?
Okay. Let me back up with that.
Okay.
Not all shelters are pre-registered, but some shelters, and that is one thing that while you're finding out your evacuation zone, you do need to check if you have to be pre-registered. Pinellas County, for example, their pet-friendly shelters, they do ask that you pre-register. They also give priority to the mobile homes, so you want to make sure there's limited space available. So you need to check if you're in Hillsborough or Manatee or Polk, you want to be checking to see if you need to pre-register at your shelter. Special needs to pre-register.
And what by doing so, by pre-registering, what is that? Does that assure you of a certain thing or just make, when something later does happen, what is pre-registering accomplish?
Pre-registering will get your information, your animal's information, special needs, and again, I'm not speaking on behalf of our EOC, but that will also give them information if they are able to accommodate you, if your needs are something that is beyond the capabilities of that shelter, what exactly it is that you need and what exactly it is that they can provide. Your animal, when you go into a shelter, if you're going to go into a pet-friendly shelter, either on the animal services side or on the Bay Area DART side, you can pick up what's called a pet passport or pet registration form. It's going to ask for your information about your pet, the color, you're going to need pictures, you're going to need the age, the breed, all your records. So the other thing is to go into a shelter or whether you're going into maybe you're going to check into a boarding facility, which again, you want to make sure is in a non-evacuation zone. You have to have all the current vaccines.
So it sounds like all this then, when something does happen, let's go back to our hopped up Chantal hypothetical.
I work for tourism, so I don't know.
Yeah, well, no, all right. But I mean, I just want to kind of keep making this you know, specific so people could really think, you know, like this is looming, what would I do? Because it sounds like then when something does hit, you're already set, you're already organized, so you wouldn't be like just scrambling there for the first time and finding out there might not be no room, but even if there were, you'd have to have all that stuff that you're not going to have in the middle of a disaster anyway.
Exactly. So what you want to do is, you know, take advantage of the times like now when it is quiet and start getting your kit together and start getting prepared, finding your zone. The first thing you want to do is find your zone and then figure out where you're going to go. You're always going to need your pet records, so you want to start gathering them up, make sure your pet has its proper records. The other thing so important, and this is just important on a daily basis, is IDing your pet. You know, whether you're doing microchipping, we suggest microchipping, and then your collar, you want to also put their name in their collar besides on a tag. We just had, for example, in our own neighborhood about 2 weeks ago, we had a beautiful golden retriever that was absolutely gorgeous dog, very well trained, showed up in our backyard. And beautiful, had a collar, everything on it, but no identification. So we took it, we just happened to take it through the house to the front yard, and luckily the owner drove by. But had that not been the right timing, we would never have been able to find that owner. So that's important, even on a daily basis. But you will have to have your pet ID'd. The other thing you want to do is have a picture of yourself with your pet, because after the disaster, when you try to reclaim your pet, or for example, if you are separated from your pet, you will need proof that that is your pet. So a photo of you and your pet is important.
And the photo is enough to establish that, obviously.
Yeah, you want to do a picture of you and your pet. So, I mean, that's a great way to reestablish it. And then get your kit together. Our website, again, bayareadart.org, does have the kit information. You can find kit information on Humane Society of the United States. ASPCA has a kit information also. Manatee has that. Hillsborough has that. But things you want to have. Carrier, to go into a shelter, you have to have a carrier that's large enough for your animal to turn around in. So you want to make sure you have that. You want to make sure that you have a leash. If your pet needs to be muzzled, you want to make sure that you have a muzzle with you. Your supplies, you want to have 10 to 14 days worth of water, food for your pet, any kind of medications, things like that. If you have a cat, you want to make sure you have litter box, scoops, things like that, garbage bags, and comfort items. It's very stressful. I mean, you're going to be stressed going into the situation. And even if you're going to a friend's house or a host house, it's still stressful. Animals get stressed out when weather happens. They're going to be stressed because you're stressed. So bring some of their toys, some blankets, you know, and try to be a little bit more patient with them and understanding that, you know, this is all scary to them. They're going into somebody's home that they don't know, or they're going into the shelter facility, or they're going into the kennel. And the other thing is, keep that in mind when you come home, when you come back from the disaster. If they are acting differently or funny, you might want to just touch base with your veterinarian and say, you know, they've seemed a little bit different since we've come back from
Well, it's probably a really difficult, alienating experience on both ends, coming in and going. So this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Trust. My guest is Michelle Schilling of the Bay Area Disaster Animal Response Team, or DART. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. So, not surprising, Katrina's come up already a few times in our conversation. I mean, to what extent did Katrina kind of really change, you know, everything about disaster animal response?
I think it was a game changer, you know, all the way around for all responding organizations. I think people took a hard look at it. And I think for the individuals, they took a hard look at it. I think even though people here in Florida said, you know, wow, it really can happen. You think we go years with nothing happening, we become complacent, and then all of a sudden this major disaster happens. For responders, you know, one of the things I was saying about never self-deploying, that's a very important thing, because people were just flocking to the area to try to help out. And that's wonderful, and that's good intention. But you really need to have that skill set, and you really need to deploy, because it needs to be structured in an organized fashion so that everybody is on the same page, which is why we encourage you. You know, if you're someone who would want to go to a disaster, find the right disaster organization or responding organization for you and get trained by them and start working with them.
Okay. And so, you know, what beyond the fact that people did sort of go willy-nilly, I mean, what would you say were some of the other, I guess, more profound lessons that Katrina imparted?
How easy it is to prepare.
Hmm. Interesting.
You know, it's easy to prepare. We can do that today. That, you know, you can gather your supplies, you can gather your food, your water, you can gather your pet's records today. You can go out and get that crate, or, you know, whether, and even, you know, financially, if you can't afford to go to PetSmart or Petco or one of the, you know, major chains to get a crate, you can start looking at some of the secondhand stores. They're abundant. Get the supplies that you need and just have them on hand. So it's not, you don't have to rush. It's really an easy thing to do. Get your pet tagged. Get it microchipped. I mean, you can put the names on the collars. As soon as we're done with the show, you can walk out there and put the name on your name and telephone number on your pet's collar. It's very easy to prepare.
Right. So, beyond just the general thing of preparing, I mean, are there any sort of specific protocols that are more directly the outgrowth of what happened at Katrina and in the wake of Katrina?
Well, I think, you know, going back to different organizations, because what happens is, when we deploy, or when a HSUS or ASPCA deploys, the responding organizations, it falls under the incident command system, and that's how the whole event is ran.
Mm-hmm.
So they know who's there. They know where the animals are being picked up. If there's animals, for example, there was a lot of animals running loose. There are staging areas where owners can come and reclaim their pets if they were separated from their pets. When there are individuals or organizations that are not part of that structure, those pets may be taken someplace else, and now no one knows where those pets went. So that's the kind of thing that you want to, you know, be aware of, because it needs to have that organized fashion. People need to know, you know, we were separated from our dog. Where is our dog? But if they're not, if these people are not on the radar.
Right. So easy to work across purposes, like say, even if you're totally well-intentioned, unless it's centrally organized. And so where, what is the sort of geographic scope of Bay Area DART? I mean, how far might the team travel in the U.S. under certain circumstances?
Well, it's really interesting. The Bay Area DART is specifically for the Bay Area, meaning Pinellas, Hillsborough, Manatee.
Mm-hmm.
But most of our team members are also trained to deploy at the state level, which is Florida SARC, State Animal Response Coalition.
Mm.
And again, a large percentage of us are also trained to deploy at the national level, which would fall under the Humane Society of the United States, or ASPCA. And we do have some members that deploy internationally. One of our team founders has deployed. She actually deployed in Japan when the tsunami took effect.
Wow. So it sounds like, depending on your level of interest and your level of training,
correct,
that's going to determine beyond Bay Area DART's scope where else you might be deployed. And sounds like there's a lot of people wearing multiple hats in those.
And it's not even just disasters. Our team will assist locally, nationally. Our team members, that depending on their level of deployment, whether they can deploy statewide or national, we are also called upon to assist with cases of maybe animal hoarding.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, it sounds like that's not uncommon. So maybe talk a little bit about that. I mean, what that work involves, because, I mean, there's some overlapping tasks, but it's obviously sort of a different and probably takes a different kind of mindset, if not a different kind of volunteer. I imagine some people have more trouble with that kind of work than others.
It is, and it's compassion fatigue, and we actually have training and classes and sessions on compassion fatigue as well. We do not run the situation. A lot of times it can be a criminal situation,
mm-hmm.
but we will be asked. For example, one of the local shelters may be bringing in the animals. So we will go in and we will be the extra hands, because shelters are already burdened with a lack of volunteers as it is.
Sure.
Now they're getting this influx of animals. So our team will go in, set up the temporary sheltering within the shelter. We'll do the intake. If they need grooming, medical, we'll assist with the medical care and their daily care till they can get integrated into the shelter that they're at. On the larger scale, there might be something at a state level or national level our volunteers go to, where it might be a hoarding or mill case where there might be hundreds of animals. We've had cases where we've had, you know, upwards of 500 dogs and 500 cats for months at a time.
Mm.
At that case, volunteers come in from all over the country, and you go and you stay for 2-3 days, and they're actually set up temporary shelters and temporary housing. And we go in, and depending on your level of expertise, if you're a vet tech, you can assist the veterinarians, or if you want to just go in and, you know, clean and feed and provide TLC for the animals, things like that, because, you know, it's very stressful for them. So another thing is, you know, I get away from that, the TLC part of it, but that's very important for the animals, especially when they're in, you know, they've been maybe seized or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, now they're in a cage. It's very traumatizing.
Yeah,
it's very stressful for them, and they're around other animals that they may not know.
Yeah. So. And for that kind of work on hoarding, or certainly large scale hoarding, is that yet another kind of more specialized form of training that the Bay Area DART volunteers that are asked to participate in that have undergone, beyond the kind of training we've talked about for hurricanes and other, you know, more natural disasters?
The setup is similar. It's still a disaster. Mm-hmm. So the protocols are all still going to be in place for setting up the cages, you know, to, there's protocol for contamination and isolation and quarantine, things like that.
Yeah.
So that's all kind of going to be the same as what we are trained for the disaster.
Okay.
You know, but we do go above and beyond with the compassion fatigue, things like that. And every circumstance is going to be different. I mean, sometimes you may get animals that, you know, are all healthy. There may be another time where you may get animals that have different levels of quarantine that you have to work with.
Yeah.
And you'll have a team leader that will, you know, each day, and with animals, it changes daily. So even if this situation's been going on for weeks or months, it's still a daily thing. And there's always going to be, when you come onto your shift, there's going to be a team leader saying, this is where we're at today. This is what we've got going on. You know, you may be working in a quarantine area, which means you're only going to work with those animals, or you may be working with the general population area, and they're going to provide you with the instructions of what to do for that day.
Sure. And it sounds like, too, that for compassion fatigue reasons, as you know, and other reasons, that people would sort of rotate in and out of some of those tasks, just so you're not doing that kind of work too solidly, where you just start to really get kind of beat up, or just maybe less effective at helping at that point.
Absolutely. It's, you know, it can be, depending on the situation, can be physically demanding. Sometimes you're working in the elements, you're working in the heat, you might have a temporary shelter that's, you know, in a hot climate. So you're going to be working with that, you know, and emotionally, I mean, it can be heartbreaking when you see some of the things that happen and some of the things that the animals are going through. But on the same hand, you know, I mean, there's a fun side to it. The Humane Society of Tampa Bay just had their Tuxes and Tails Ball a few months ago, and they needed some extra hands to get everyone fluffed and buffed and get new hairdos for their event that night. And they called Bay Area DART and said, could you provide us some volunteers to come out? And so I got to go bathe puppies on a Saturday morning. So
that's truly, truly, truly versatile. But so that I guess kind of raised an interesting point is between, like, we're talking about rotating in, say, the hoarding thing, and then the much more desirable thing of preparing puppies and kittens for their big outing, their big ball. What is, like, you've said there's 80 some odd volunteers, but if a certain task or disaster or something only requires 30 or 50 or whatever, I mean, how does that work? Is that then based on who's available at that moment? Is there some other formula for determining? Because in some cases, you have to probably move swiftly, so you have to figure out, okay, these are the folks that'll go on this, and then these folks will maybe stay back and go in the next one. How does that get coordinated?
Absolutely. We have a wonderful coordinator. She's absolutely wonderful. We'd be lost without her. She has all of our volunteer information, and she's the one who keeps all of our records. So she knows what our skills are, what classes we've taken, what our level of experience is. What she will do is then contact the ones based on, she'll contact the volunteers that have that specific skill set. She'll start with them, and then we do. It's based on, you know, if you're available, things like that, because we're not going to send someone into a situation that they don't have the proper training either, because that, you know, doesn't help our cause either.
Right, counterproductive, absolutely. We're sort of in the, nearing the end of our time here, Michelle, but one thing, I mean, kind of an obvious focus here of the conversation has been cats and dogs, but what sort of disaster procedure does Bay Area DART recommend for, let's say, horses, where evacuation and especially sheltering pose a whole different set of challenges?
That is a whole other set of challenges. Livestock is another set of challenges. In our area, in the Pinellas County area, Walsingham Park in the past has been where people can go for their horses. They actually just let them loose is what they do in the park area. Most people that have that type of pet know that they need to find out where they can go. There are some foster homes host homes where there's websites they can look to see who will help shelter, like some of the stables that are out of the area. And a lot of people with equines will check other further areas, like maybe Gainesville area or Orlando, so that they can trailer their horses and take them completely out of the area. In the past, there was times that the fairground was open. So if you have that, you need to check. If you have livestock, you might want to check with the state agricultural response team to see, you know, what the procedures are and what they have available for that. Chances are with the livestock, they're going to stay where they're at. I mean, a lot of times people don't have the ability to move all of them depending on the timelines that they have. Exotics, you need to check in. If you have exotics, if you have a snake, or if you have any type of reptiles, you also want to be checking with your local exotic veterinarians. What do they suggest? And, you know, that's a whole nother set of challenges for them, taking them into a shelter, things like that. How do you transport them? Make sure you know. I mean, you know, some suggest that, for example, a snake, you know, you want to have it in a different type of a container or a different type of a caging unit. So you need to know what you need based on where you're going as well.
Right. So really the running theme here, or certainly one of the key ones, has been really it's sort of self-evident, and yet I don't think probably enough people have taken this to heart, is the preparation, the figuring out what you would need and maybe how many days you might need it. And even like you said, the thing about, I mean, a lot of us might be pretty good about IDing our pets or chipping our pets, but if you figure if you chip your pet and they have a collar, but you wouldn't necessarily think to put the name or phone number on there as well, and the picture, you know, of you and your pet. I mean, so there's a lot of really great information that you've given, and again, as you've mentioned a number of times, the website has just got a wealth of information. Again, it's bayareadart.org. So, Michelle, before we sort of really do hit the very last moment here, anything in particular that we haven't hit on that's kind of pivotal for people to be thinking about in the weeks into hurricane season, and with Chantal again sort of doing whatever it's going to do in the next couple of days?
You know, really, it's just the fact that if it's not safe for you to be there, it's not safe for them to be there. You know, there's so many animals that lost their lives unnecessarily in the past, and humans that lost their lives in the past just because they stayed when it wasn't really safe. So we want to, you know, encourage people to get ahead, start thinking about what you need to do. A lot of the stuff you can take care of today. Again, our website, you can provide information there. If you have specific questions, you can tweet me at Beagle Place. Very simple to do, and I'll try to help you out with any questions that you have there. Reach out to your emergency management. A lot of people in our area, we have a lot of tourists in the area. They travel with their pets. If you're traveling with your pets, kind of keep in the back of your mind, you know, if I'm here and a tornado happens, where do I go? Who do I contact? Do I contact EOC? Can I, you know, what do I need to have on hand if, you know, we're in that area? So you kind of want to be thinking about those things as well. And again, you know, if you're interested in, you know, working with us or volunteering with us, we'd love to hear from you. You can email volunteer@gmail.com for that. And we have a class coming up in Naples on the 3rd of August.
That sounds great. And let's say somebody is listening and said, boy, I think I really would like to volunteer with Bay Area Dart. I mean, what, you know, obviously there's a number of classes and training sessions that we've talked about. Like, what's the general timetable from someone that let's say emailed today to get involved with the classes and training before they would actually be in a position to really help out should something come up?
Well, a lot of the classes can be taken online. They're they're FEMA classes, so you can get that done. Once you go through the class on August 3rd, and then we do have them coming up after that, so you can go to the site and check out the different dates that they're available. So once you get through that, then we do require some hands-on training, but a lot of people that do come to our organization already have the hands-on training, maybe from volunteering at a shelter, or they're, you know, in the field, something like that. Mm-hmm. If not, you can get your hands-on time with the animals at the local shelters, and we can kind of help you with that as well. Or sometimes, like some of the tasks, like the puppy bathing, I mean, that can kind of help towards your animal handling, some of your animal handling experience. But in the meantime, I mean, we still can use you as a volunteer. There's so many things we can do, like intake registration, things like that, that you can help with. Even different things, photographers. I mean, if you have a knack for photography, we might be able to use you. Or if you're a social media guru, you know. Yeah. So whatever your skill set is, you know, talk to us, because there's so many different components to the organization that we can still work with you and
put all kinds of talents
to
good use.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, we've been speaking with Michelle Schilling again from Bay Area Disaster Animal Response Team, or DART. And one more time, the website is bayareadart.org. So, Michelle, thank you so much for making the time to come in and join us today on Talking Animals, and all your great work and all your colleagues' great work at Bay Area DART. And we'll hope that there's not that much to do in the coming days, weeks, and months in that way. But I know you'll also be helping out in other more upbeat, positive ways either way. So.
Perfect. Thank you. We appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right. In just a few minutes, we'll probably hear another animal tune. But right now, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. This is Greg Fitzsimmons with a piece called Adopting a Dog on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
So we rescued a puppy, which is great. You've rescued a puppy before. Okay, beautiful. It's a great thing. Millions of dogs are put to sleep every year because there's not enough homes. And you go in and you're a hero. You go save one. You walk in there and you think it's going to be easy. You're like, I'll take that one. They're like, oh, not so fast, asshole. First, you got to fill out this 28-page application. Right? Name, social security number. If you and your wife divorce, who gets custody of the dog? I don't know. We never talked about it. Thanks for planting that seed for us. And then they set up a home inspection. I'm not making this up. Literally, woman shows up to my house. Clipboard, little beard, light beard. Didn't see it at first. And now she's looking around my house while I stand out front waiting. Just nervous that she's going to come out and be like, yeah, we're just going to go ahead and kill the dog. This doesn't feel right to let him live here the way you do. Take him out back and just shoot him. We feel pretty good when we rescue a dog, don't we? Right? We feel like heroes. Meanwhile, there's two types of shelters in the country. There's shelters for dogs, the Humane Society. Shelters for people, halfway house. Not even a whole house, half a house. And then we rescue from the other one. We grab a dog, we bring him home, and we wash him, and we fix him. We bring him to bed, and we pet him, and we hold him, take him for a walk. And then we walk around a human that's laid out on the sidewalk to pick up from the dog that we rescued. What's wrong with that picture? Why don't we rescue from the other place? Just go in there, I'll take that guy, bring him out. Take him home, give him a steak and a shave, a little corduroy bed in the corner. Come on, Freckles, let's take a walk. It's Dennis. I told you my name's Dennis. Freckles! Come on, let's go outside. Been outside a lot. Kind of want to stay inside for a while. Your friend comes over. He's cute. What is he? I think he's Dutch.
All right. That was Greg Fitzsimmons with a piece called Adopting a Dog that I don't think is even yet on one of his CDs. He sent me the piece. Good info. Good things to ponder there. All right, so I'm Duncan Strauss. Towards the end of the show, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will win a Wild Flag CD. There was a Portlandia Marathon last weekend, which kind of reminded me of Carrie Brownstein's great newer band Wild Flag. So we have their terrific debut CD as a prize for Name That Animal Tune today. So we'll do that in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Right now, it's time for animal news and announcements. First of all, Sunday's New York Times carried quite a piece about PETA, the fact that it euthanizes most of its shelter animals, believing it's the most humane thing to do. So we're interested in PETA and their sort of position and reputation, and also people, of course, interested in no kill and the other side of that philosophical continuum. Might want to search for that article if you didn't see it in Sunday's New York Times. Also, in the New York Times, I think this was Monday, but a great and big piece called headlined Unlikely Partners Freeing Chimps from the Lab, really discussing the recent decision and the implementation, really, of the National Institutes of Health, freeing the most, of chimps that had been set aside for research. And anyway, it's really kind of sprawling, great article with everyone from Jane Goodall to various chimp sanctuary folks quoted, and in fact, the director of the National Institutes of Health who made this decision. So anyways, well worth reading in all kinds of way, and online there's really some great video that goes with that as well. Coming up more locally here, this Saturday, July 13th, there's an Exotic Pet Amnesty Day. It's going to be held at Boyd Hill Nature Preserve in St. Petersburg from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Owners who can no longer care for exotic pets may turn them in free of charge. No consequences, even if I I believe, even if they're pets, you shouldn't necessarily have. So regional and state officials will be on hand to accept the animals. Then starting at about 2 p.m., those officials will begin pairing the animals with new owners who have pre-registered as prospective adopters. So all surrendered animals must be in a cage or container, and there will be no penalties for illegal exotic animals. So you need to check that out online if you're going to possibly adopt an exotic pet. There's a website, but the first thing to probably really do would just go to Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, or just go to myfwc.com and then search for this particular link for the Exotic Pet Amnesty Day this Saturday in St. Petersburg. Also this Saturday, locally here, it's Christmas in July. There's a Pet and Family Photo Day and incredibly affordable animal wellness workshop sponsored by Animal Coalition of Tampa. Photo sittings from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Lucky Dog, just across the street from ACT. So you can find out more by going to actampa.org. And the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, through the auspices of a PetSmart Charities grant, will be doing Primp Your Pet. It's a spay-neuter campaign that's I think gets underway in August. But basically any sort of pit bull terrier mixes can be spay neutered for an incredibly discounted rate, and as part of that they get a free nail trim and a colorful bandana. And this event applies to all residents of Hillsborough County, but you do need to schedule an appointment. Go to humanesocietytampa.org, or if you're calling 813-870-3304, be sure to mention the Primp Your Pit promotion and scheduling those appointments. This happened on my side of state yesterday. Emaciated pygmy sperm whale and her calf died Tuesday morning after they beached themselves on Jupiter Island. Their bodies were taken for examination to the Gumbo Limbo Nature Center in Boca Raton, but authorities said they suspected the mother may have had a heart disease common among the species. The whales were discovered early in the morning by volunteers looking for newly established sea turtle nests. Quote, they were about 100 yards apart, both rolling in the surf, said Dr. Charles Manier, a veterinarian and director of research and rehabilitation at Loggerhead Marine Center, who was one of the first on the scene. The mother was in the process of dying, and the calf was still alive. Unfortunately, they went on to explain that a calf that young cannot survive without its mother, so the calf did need to be euthanized. And took this from the LA Times. The city of Hawthorne, this is yesterday's LA Times, or last night's, I guess, was forced to cancel its city council meeting Tuesday after web traffic overwhelmed the city's website and prevented officials from posting the meeting agenda. The website, down since last Monday, was flooded with traffic after a public outcry against a video that shows a Hawthorne police officer fatally shooting a dog while restraining its owner, Leon Rosby. Rosby pulled up to the scene of a police stand-up June 30 and began filming police with a cell phone. As three officers approached him, Rosby placed his 2-year-old Rottweiler Max in his car. The dog escaped through an open window and began to bark and lunge at officers. One officer drew his gun and fired 4 shots. In the aftermath of the controversial shooting, the Hawthorne Police Department has been deluged with calls and emails asking that the officer be fired, as well as bomb threats and death threats to the officers and other city staff. Police have said about 100 people protested in front of the police department on Saturday. It goes on to explain that the hacking activist group Anonymous, I think, are involved in thwarting the website activity there. So I think that'll do it for this edition of Animal News and Announcements. And we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. I'll be back next Wednesday, July 17th, with another edition. I hope you'll join us then. I also hope you'll visit our website at talkinganimals.net, where we also make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts, past Talking Animals programs, including last week's show about puppy raisers for guide dogs, hosted by Flea. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby Busalis. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. We're closing out today's show with an animal song from The Dead Weather. This is The Dead Weather with I Cut Like a Buffalo. on WMNF Tampa, Largo, Weekiwachi, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 9 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.
Hey. You know I love you like a woman, but I cut like a buffalo. Like a